You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Craft, and Sister D.D. Combs. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Report, Ashe. We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with the Dinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more!" We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths. We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Davis Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, John
Henry Clark, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Come, let us sit and try to relate. Because now, more than ever, we must show discipline, tolerance, and production to build a strong and better nation. I say that is the main foundation. So, come, let us work. Is working hard for our country. We must have regard. Forget all your differences. Let we start to build. And onward to progress, we surely will. Because now more than ever, we
again. That is the main foundation. So come let us work hand in hand, because this is our land. Come my brother, come my sister, and let us build a nation together. Things that we need to see about, surely I do have to spell them out. Cause you know as well as I do, the only way is putting more effort and less play. Because now more than ever we must show discipline, tolerance and production to build strong and better nation. I say that is the main foundation. So come let us walk hand in hand, because this is our land. Come my brother, come my sister, and let us build a nation together. Also goes for every Trinbagonian who want to live in a foreign land. Now is the time to come home and do something instead of staying out there and freezing. Because now more than ever we must show discipline, tolerance and production to build a strong and better nation. I say that is the main foundation. So come let us put hand in hand, because this is our land. Come my brother, come my sister, and let us build a nation together.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Connie. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE podcast@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Good evening. This is Dr. Janine James, and we are delighted to see you join us, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And our hosts today are Sister Dee Dee Conley, Queen Mother Shabaka, and Brother Charles Robinson. And we are so happy so that we can bring to you a discussion about feeding ourselves, first step to self-determination. And we think about eating. We must empower ourselves through what we ingest. We must control our own food to control our health and our economics. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee welcomes our guest, Brother Duncan Kay of the Nation of Islam. And we are so happy to have our host with us today, as well as our guest. And we'd like to have our brother Charles Robinson, if he would please give us our ancestral profile for today.
Oh, yes, I'm honored to do that. Very interesting profile. George Washington Carver was an agricultural scientist and an inventor who developed hundreds of products using peanuts, although not peanut butter, like a lot of people think he invented peanut butter, but that's claimed, but that's not true. Sweet potatoes and soybeans. Born into slavery a year before it was outlawed, Carver left home at a young age to pursue education and would eventually earn a master's degree in agricultural science from Iowa State University. He would go on to teach and conduct research at Tuskegee University for decades. And soon after his death, his childhood home would be named a monument, the first of its kind to honor any African American. Born on a farm near Diamond, Missouri, the exact date of Carver's birth is unknown, but it's thought he was born in January or June of 1864. 9 years prior, Moses Carver, a white farmer owner, purchased George Carver's mother, Mary, when she was 13 years old. The elder Carver reportedly was against slavery, but needed to help. He needed help with his 240-acre farm. So when Carver was an infant, he, his mother, and his sister were kidnapped from the Carver farm by one of the bands of slave raiders that roamed Missouri during the Civil War era. They were sold in Kentucky. Moses Carver hired a neighbor to retrieve them, but the neighbor only succeeded in finding George, whom he had purchased by trading one of Moses's finest horses. Carver grew up knowing little about his mother or his father, who had died in an accident before he was born. Moses Carver and his wife Susan raised the young George and his brother James as their own and taught the boys how to read and write. James grew up, gave up his studies and focused on working in the fields with Moses. George, however, was a frail and sickly child who could not help with such work. He couldn't do hard work. So instead, Susan taught him how to cook, how to sew, how to mend, embroider, and how to do laundry and gardening. as well as how to concoct simple herbal medicines. At a young age, Carver took a keen interest in plants and experimented with natural pesticides, fungicides, and soil conditioners. He became known as the plant doctor to local farmers due to his ability to discern how to improve the health of their gardens, fields, and orchards. At age 11, Carter left the farm to attend an all-black school in the nearby town of Neosho. He was taken in by Andrew and Mariah Watkins, a childless African-American couple who gave him a roof over his head in exchange for his help with household chores. A midwife and nurse, Mariah imparted on Carver her broad knowledge of medicinal herbs and her devout faith. Disappointed with the education he received at Neosho School, Carver moved to Kansas about 2 years later, joining numerous other African-Americans who were traveling west. For the next decade or so, Carver moved from one Midwestern town to another, putting himself through school and surviving off of the domestic skills he learned from his foster mothers. He graduated from Minneapolis High School in Minneapolis, Kansas in 1880 and applied to Highland College in Kansas. He was initially accepted at the all-white college, but was later rejected when the administration found out that he was black. In the late 1880s, Carver befriended the Milhollands, a white couple in Winterset, Iowa, who encouraged him to pursue a higher education. Despite his former setback, he enrolled in Simpson College, a Methodist school that admitted all qualified applicants. Carver initially studied art and piano in hopes of earning a teaching degree, but one of his professors, Etta Budd, was skeptical of a black man being able to make a living as an artist. After learning of his interest in plants and flowers, Budd encouraged Carver to apply to the Iowa State Agricultural School, now Iowa State University, to study botany. In 1894, Carver became the first African-American to earn a bachelor's degree of science. Impressed by Carver's research on the fungal infections of soybean plants, his professors asked him to stay on for graduate studies. Carver worked with famed mycologist, which is a fungal scientist, L.H. Pamel, at the Iowa State Experimental Station, honing his skills in identifying and treating plant diseases. In 1896, Carver earned his master's degree in agricultural science and immediately received several offers, the most attractive of which came from Booker T. Washington, whose last name George would later add to his own. And Booker T. Washington, of course, of Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University in Alabama. Washington convinced the university's trustees to establish an agricultural school, which could only be run by Carver if Tuskegee was to keep its all-black faculty. Carver accepted the offer and would work at Tuskegee Institute for the rest of his life. There's much more to read, but I think we got a pretty good picture of the life and times of George Washington Carver.
We really do. That is a very fascinating history that he has. Sister Dee Dee, you have some things you wanted to share with us?
I apologize. I was muted. But that was very nice. Brother Charles pretty much summed it up. But I would like to say where I was reading, where it said he that George Washington Carver had over 100 uses for the sweet potato. And then it said how he grew the tomato, and he had 150 ways to prepare it for the table. And then I would like to also mention, too, everything. This was a very, very intelligent brother, very smart, intelligent brother. And I must say, because every time I think about him or even read or talk about him, I think about, when I read about the reason his voice is the way it is, because those white folks had him castrated so he wouldn't attempt to mess with their daughter, which she probably would attempt to mess with him first. But anyway, I found that very cruel, very cruel. But he was such an intelligent and a godly man, and he really didn't deserve that. But that's how those people were. But anyway, that's it, Dr. James. Thank you. Thank you, family.
Well, thank you, Brother Charles.
And thank you, Brother Charles.
And thank you, Sister Didi, for sharing this very valuable information from history, from one of our ancestors, George Washington Carver. And Queen Mother Shabaka, we are so happy that you have joined us today. I know you have been so excited about bringing to us your guests, our guests. And Queen Mother Shabaka, if you would please introduce our guests today.
It would be my pleasure. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening, everyone, as well. And I am excited to bring our guest, Brother Duncan S. And I'm excited about the topic, feeding ourselves, because I believe that is the first step to self-determination. If we depend on other people to feed us, we're in trouble. So I want to introduce our guest, who is passionate about feeding ourselves. Brother Duncan Etch is a passionate advocate of the economic development plan of the Nation of Islam. He wants us to know that he is first and foremost a student of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and that spiritual knowledge of self and God is the foundation on which the Nation of Islam stands. Unity, education, land, and farming are the foundation of the economic program of the Nation of Islam. Brother Duncan also wants people to know that he is a reformed criminal through the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan. He uses every opportunity that presents itself to share with the Black community information about the importance of land and farming. He himself used to farm with his father in Michigan, where he grew up in Grand Rapids, but he works now at Milwaukee Public Schools. He comes from a family of 9 brothers and sisters, and he's the youngest, so I can see why his father was growing food. Evening, Brother Duncan is going to share with us why we need to feed ourselves, own our farms and land, and using the Nation of Islam as a model, how we can do it in the Black community. So I'm honored to introduce Brother Duncan X. Good evening, Brother Duncan. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, Walaikum Salaam, sister. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you, sister, Mother Shabaka, for the introduction. Thank you for allowing me to come and bring the teaching of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad to this august body. And I just want to open up in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God. I bear Muhammad is his messenger. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that farming is the engine for our national life. He uses the word national life because farming is the basis of a nation. What we don't have as a nation, we don't have our own land that we can call ourselves a nation because we have been stripped from our former enemies and not allowed to cultivate and to feed ourselves. So now we are at the beckoning hand of an enemy that is trying to actually kill us, because now they don't need us anymore because we built their schools, we built their institutions, we built their cars, we built their planes. We did everything necessary for them, but we did not build anything for ourselves. So now they have got us off the land down south and made us run into the inner cities to where we thought that integration was the best thing for us, and we lost the land in turn. And now they are plotting to destroy us through the food system, and we are actually participating in this destruction, not knowing that we are actually killing ourselves because we don't have our own land. So the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us we must have land first. And also, he said that in what the Muslims want, I just want to read, I don't want to read all of it, but I just want to read point number four. He said that we believe that our former slave master are obligated to provide such land and that the area must be fertile and mentally rich. We believe that our former slave masters, are obligated to maintain and supply our needs in this separate state or territory for the next 20 to 25 years until we are able to produce and supply our own needs. And we can't say that they can't do it, because every year the government gives Israel billions of our taxpayers' money in the land that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that we need 5 to 6 states, and that will be in the land that we were enslaved at, which is down in the Bible, the Black Belt down in Georgia, Alabama, Miami, those areas. And we should be given the necessary needs to supply our own needs. But they would not do that, because once we come, once we have that necessary land, we will become the rulers in the land like Joseph was in Egypt. And the enemy understands that once we acquire land, we will become a great nation. So the Minister Farrakhan went over to Cuba, and he seen that how Cuba was feeding their people. And what he discovered is that in the inner city, they had these co-op farms, houses, I mean, where they was feeding in the neighborhood. So the grains, like the rice, the potatoes, the beans was out on the outskirts. But in the inner city, they had co-op stores. They was growing grass, I mean, food in the front yards and in the backyards, and they began to have stores. And this is what we need as a people. We need black stores in our community where we can supply our people with the necessary food that they have, because COVID-19 taught us a lesson. Our people were dying because of comorbidities, because we was overweight, like we had suffered from diabetes and so on. But yet in turn, it taught us a great lesson that we must go back to the earth and feed ourselves and not allow our enemies to feed us, because they are trying to get rid of us off the planet. And there's a war going on. And we have to understand that this is actually a war to get off the darker people off the planet.
Oh, thank you for that. As you were speaking about the need to own land, I recalled a documentary that I saw about why the settlers came to the to this continent of America in the first place. They all came to acquire land.
That's right.
And now, and and now our people have given up. First, we were moved off the land, and then we began to give up the land in pursuit of the so-called American dream of moving to the city that we thought were moving us upward. So, yeah, and I like what you said about farming being the basis of a nation.
Right.
You know, when we talk about feeding ourselves as a first step to self-determination, if I recall correctly, the historians tell us that Kemet, or ancient Egypt, which developed a great civilization that's still the envy and wonder of the world, they were able to build that phenomenal civilization because of having a surplus of food. That the overflowing of the Nile River made the land so fertile that they could produce surplus food. Mm-hmm. And having surplus food enabled the people to devote less time to struggling for survival and spend more time on developing the civilized society that gave to the world all the arts and sciences and the spiritual foundation for Western religion. So we can see how feeding ourselves really is the first step towards self-determination and civilization. So you are a passionate advocate of the farm and land agenda of the Nation of Islam. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Is the Nation of Islam farm and land agenda one that can be replicated in the Black communities?
Yes, so ma'am.
Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, before the fall of the nation, we had thousands and thousands of acres of land, and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad would have ships go out into Peru that would bring fish back, and it would feed the Black community. In Georgia, right now, the nation grows its own food. We have our own staple foods, and that food is brought from the south and given to the nearest mosque around the country. But what we must do, we must have communities, co-ops in our community, because to ship food across the nation, it will be very expensive to do. So this way we can participate to work together and collectively as a unit, as brothers and sisters in numerous neighborhoods. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad started a economic blueprint plan that was so sufficient and that would help us get us out of this condition. He asked for us to give a nickel a day, which that same method applies right now today. And the reason why I say that, if you do the math, a nickel a day is 35 cents a week. And then if you times a year, that's $1,800 rounded off. And if 5 million people have done that, 5 million people is 40 to 50 million of us here in the United States. At the end of the year, we would have $90 million to where we can buy our own land, we can buy our own food, we can buy our own seeds, we can have, and we can build a nation. So the Nation of Islam is a model for us as a people. Though we've been having the worst enemy, we have been surviving for the last 90 years, and we are moving. I was watching a thing on with Dr. Risley Muhammad, and he was showing in the various states that the nation is providing co-op stores all over the nation. And I did not know this until I saw it, and it kind of like brought tears to my eyes, because I see the nation is on a move, but the enemy would not allow our people to see the progress that the nation is making through farming, because that is the foundation on which we believe that will create a great nation among our people.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, well, actually it was many years ago, I was in law school in Madison, and I was studying with the FOI, and I used to sell the you know, we used to sell the fish, the whiting. That was the best whiting fish.
Yes, sir.
I think you could get on the planet, and the bean pie, and the paper and everything. But you know, I did a little research a couple of years ago and discovered that African Americans have lost 80% of the land that we had owned going back to 1865, around the end of the Civil War. I think it was 16 million acres, and now
yes,
we're
sir.
Down to around we're down to like 6 or 7 million. That's almost 90% of the land that we used to own, we lost, and now we're still being dispossessed of land through foreclosures in the cities.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's huge.
It is. And there are statistics about, you know, how our people began losing the land in the South through the Jim Crow laws and what do they call it? Tenant farmers and those folks that just systematically moved our people off the land, which is the same thing that was done on the continent of Africa. The same thing was done in the Caribbean. The people were moved off of the fertile land and moved into areas where you can't hardly grow anything. And then
And in South Africa, you know, we the indigenous people, you know, the Africans, the original people there, lost the land to the white Afrikaners. So for 105 years, we didn't own the land. They owned the land. We were just working the land for them. But they were the farmers. So now that after Mandela, you know, became president, and then they changed the laws. Now we got ownership of the land back, and they don't have the experience of farming. So I was wondering, it would be great if the black farmers, before they all die out, could link hands with the brothers over in South Africa now that they got the land back, because we got the technology and the knowledge. And just think what that would be like if we had that kind of collaboration.
Well, the minister has delegates going around the country making those connections, but they are not, you know, seeing. Only way you will find the information, it will be in the Final Call newspaper. And that's why we say the information that the nation provides is something that keeps us abreast of what is going on nationally, internationally, and domestic, where we at home, and what's going over in other countries, because the enemy would not provide us with those information because he does not want us to connect with our African brothers across seas. And this is what Malcolm X was trying to do when he went across seas. He was trying to connect us to our brothers and sisters in other countries. That's the uniting force that we have, because once we produce food over here, then our brothers and sisters in Africa, Asia, and other countries, we can do trade and commerce with them, and then we become the ruling power. But first, we have to come together as a unified force and move out with one mission, is to save our people.
So, our people are eating food that really is not even food.
No, it's not.
We are, you know, when we're dependent on what's provided and told to us is food, and our people, especially when we live in food deserts, where there's no fresh produce available, we end up eating non-food. coming in.
That's the same thing that Dr. Sabi was saying. Dr. Sabi was saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And
that
so
what we're eating
then,
is not food.
Right. And so mm-hmm. then what you said earlier, Brother Duncan, about our people being compromised when COVID hit, because so many of us have high blood pressure, heart trouble, diabetes, mm-hmm. obesity, and those things. And we don't realize that it's because of, this Dr. Wallace said that obesity is malnutrition. That people who are obese because they don't get the proper nutrients for their bodies to metabolize what they ingest. So, we got to look at that, but we need to have some, I know you talked about organizing co-ops.
Right.
And I think Wisconsin is a good example of organizing co-ops, but not by our people. We can
right.
see other people in Wisconsin, they have farm co-ops,
mm-hmm.
have food co-ops selling farm produce, retail.
Right.
And some of the co-ops have become really large grocery chains.
Right.
From people just starting with a handful of people working together, pooling resources and time. I remember when Outpost Co-op started, people could get food by just volunteering to work.
Mm-hmm.
And we can find models amongst all people. If we have the eye and we're looking for how we can do for ourselves, we can watch other people who have done for themselves. And there's a lot of that going on in Wisconsin. So, Brother Duncan, you were sharing with me about a project that you had going on with Brother Mike McGee and...
Yes, Mike McGee. Yes,
Will Allen. And can you tell us about that? Something that we could do, maybe.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, me and Mike McGee had got together and we had put together a bus. It was a co-op bus that we would ride around in the community, or we would sit on certain areas, like we would go like on Sherman and Capitol, and we would have fresh fruits, and we were getting it from Will Alley, and we was getting it from various places that we would grow food. But the bus had broke down, and we didn't go any further with it, and that's been on my mind lately, and that was something that I believe that we should use to go into these desert area cities that our people don't have these fresh fruits and fresh produce. By us growing them in the city, we can supply the needs of our people, and we can save a lot of lives, because a lot of our people don't know how to eat. I was watching a program, I think it was in Indianapolis, the nation had gave out some like 30,000 bags of fruit. It was just so much fruit and vegetables. And it was these women, they was young, they was 20 years old, and they didn't even know how to cook the food, because everything is in the microwave. Everything is microwave. Everything is fast. So the nation had to set up a cooking class. We have a canning class. We have to work. We show women how to sew. We show women how to cook. We show women how to clean. We show them how to can food. We have all this in the nation, but our people don't know this. So me and Mike McGee, we started this food bus, but it had broke down. But I've been desiring to do it again, because I've been looking at our community, and I'm looking at our people, that they're getting bigger and bigger in obesity and just dying. We just lost a brother. Biz Markie just died. He was 57 years old. He just died from diabetes. So, and I'm also in another group. Yes, ma'am. I'm also in another group to where it's about almost 100 of us, and this is a fasting group. We fast from Thursday. We eat our last meal Thursday, and we eat again Friday. We do this every week. And the reason why we do this is because we know the assault from the foods that we're eating. We're minimizing the blows by fasting through the teaching of the Most High Elijah Muhammad, following the Hadith to Live book. And we have saved a lot of lives. If you can just hear the testimonies, we have solved. We have healed people with cancer. We have healed people with diabetes. We have healed people with obesity. And this is something that this is a model for our people to look at. A brother named is Abdul Malik. Y'all probably know him, 12X out of Chicago. We've been doing this for about almost a year. I've been fasting for 50-something weeks. Every week, I go 3 days. I don't eat any food. I just drink water, and then we will break fast, and we will have a class. So this is something that we should get highly involved in because we can save a lot of lives. But the bus is something that we need. We need not just one bus. We need multiple buses to where we have fruit and vegetables, and we can take them in and into the desert areas where people live.
Brother Duncan, guess what?
Yes, sir.
Right before this broadcast, I was walking because I was on a couple of Zooms earlier today. I didn't get no exercise today or yesterday, so I got to get in at least, you know, half an hour. So I was walking down Sherman Boulevard, and guess what I saw? I saw a fresh food bus.
Okay.
It was green, and I had never seen it before. And I turned around and looked at it, and I saw they had boxes of fruits and vegetables inside. It was one of those short school buses converted.
Yes, sir.
Well, it was painted. Is that the same bus you're talking about?
That was a bus that ours was white. But what we did, we took all the seats out and we put shelves in there, and the people could walk in and see the fruits what they wanted. And then we was by the gas station, and we would have the fruit sitting down in baskets. It was so big that people would come all over everywhere, and we used to go on Facebook, and people would come and get the fruits and vegetables, because I sell fruit and bananas, oranges, sometimes when I'm out there, and the people be like, man, where do you get this fruit from? And I say, it's not the fruit, it's the love and the person that's touching the fruit. What it does is the energizing spirit that when a person touches the fruit, that life, that energy goes inside the fruit and the vegetable, and they can feel it, and it brings them to life because we got life in us. But yeah, we need buses like that. We need to find out somehow to where we can come up with the necessary money to get a bus. So I'm taking it upon myself. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to save some money because I have to get a bus because I'm obligated. I just can't sit back and see how people are dying at the rate that they're dying at. I just can't do it.
Well, folks, I'd like to thank this for this, where we are with this conversation. But I do need to give our sponsor, EDOC Advice, an opportunity to share. EDOC Advice is a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that makes sense to you. EDOC Advice is one of our sponsors, and other sponsors are certainly welcome to join us. Sister Dee, do we have you have some information about what our website is? Or our email address, I should say. Well, I think that I have that information. Our email address is sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. So if we have anyone with any questions or calls that they'd like to share with us, you can go to our website, to our email address, and we will respond. And we are so fascinated about this subject. Food is something that we deal with multiple times a day, every day. And as a physician, I've noticed that everyone has been so concerned about receiving a COVID vaccine. But we don't hear anybody wondering about what are we getting in the food.
That's right. That's right.
And don't you think that's a bit concerning? Don't want to get a vaccination to prevent an infection. We are missing some of the foods in our diet that would help us to build up our immune system to allow us to fight an infection so that we don't become ill. But nobody is really saying that they have a problem with, as what you're saying, are we're ingesting something that really are not food. And you
Sister,
might wonder what impact does that have on our overall health?
Sister, may I address that?
Yes, please.
Okay, Dr. Aleem Muhammad, when the 1990, when the AIDS pandemic hit the black community, Dr. Aleem went over to Africa and brought back a thing called Kimron, anti-interferon, which is a provine immune booster that boosts the immune system. And now we have a thing called Paximmune. And right now we have saved over 50,000 lives with Paximmune. Minister Farrakhan said this in his address, that we need to get our people Paximmune, and he said it was fourteen other things that we can use to save our people, but Paximmune was on the top of the list. Cuba, as of right now, used Paximmune when the COVID-19 broke out in Wuhan, China. Cuba sent delegates over to China, and they took interferon, which is Paximmune. And Paximmune is known to kill viruses, all viruses. It halts it all. It kills it. It's called Paximmune. This is something that Dr. Aleem developed, and this is something that the Nation of Islam has, and this is something that I'm a distributor of it, and I use it every day. I give it to my wife. I give it to my children, and this is something that I have seen with my own eyes how many people they have said it's a protein booster. It gives you the food that your body needs. It's really a food, and it comes from the cow that they developed over in Kenya.
So is that a product that you say you're a distributor?
Yeah, I'm a distributor of the Paximmune. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So before we end the program, if you'd like to give out your information so that people can get it, that would be real helpful. And then on the other side of that immune question, as Dr. Jane said, we don't do what's necessary to build up our immune system. And then, on the other hand, we ingest things that compromise our immune system. And as Dr. Jane said, people who are objecting, and I'm not a vaccine advocate. When I go to the doctor, they know. Don't ask me.
But
it raises the question to me when people say they don't take the vaccine because they don't know what's in it. But then they'll go to the corner store and buy some of that non-food that they have no clue what's in it. So we have to tackle it on both ends. We have to build up the immune system, and we have to stop tearing it down by what we eat.
Well, we're going to have a station break here at the top of the hour. We are, and come back to this fascinating discussion. We have more to come, and we'll see you shortly.
Okay.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Craft, and Sister D.D. Connors. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Well, we are back. This is Dr. Janine James, and I'm part of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. We are here with our other host, Queen Mother Shabaka, Sister Dede Conley, and Brother Charles Robinson, who are here talking about growing our own food. And we've invited and are so happy to have with us our guest, Brother Duncan X, who has been leading us into a better understanding about the things that we are ingesting. Some we call food, some of us are calling it non-food. And we're here with for questions and comments. Our number is 215-490-9832. Anyone who has a question or a comment regarding our subject today, please give us a call. But we certainly want to continue the conversation that we've been having. We do have I see one caller at, this is 919-365. You have a question or a call?
No, I'm just listening.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Brother Duncan.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. You got us heated up about the subject.
Yes, all right,
and we provided a little controversy, perhaps, when we're talking about the foods that are available to us, and what options do we have from going to the store, buying the food that's there. What are the alternatives to that? What would you share with us about?
Yes, ma'am.
In our own food.
The alternative to that, I would say, we must, as a nation, connect with those who are growing food in our neighborhood and with the Black farmers down south and with the Nation of Islam. Like I said before, the Nation has been in existence for 90 years and has been scrutinized by the worst enemy on the planet, but yet we are still here. So we are an example of survival to our people. So Minister Farrakhan said that we must go back and get land to survive, because we have to feed our people and not depend on other people to feed us. Because as long as we allow other people to feed us, then they can dictate to us what we eat, when we eat, and how we should eat. But if we have our own community producing foods, to where we have stores in the Black communities and we work as a unit, we can beat and survive the assault that is happening to our people. We have to come together as brothers and sisters and sit down and trust each other. Our problem that I see from the teaching is that we have the lack of love for each other and the lack of trust, because we don't believe that we are qualified to do the things it is that we need to survive. But we depend on white people and we trust them. I was reading this book and it says that we work all day for our enemy and then we turn right around and buy his goods.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to highlight what you said. What that answer, I wish you could go back and just restate everything that you said. It was just so powerful and significant. And I want to thank Queen Mother Shabaka for bringing you in to be a guest. Of all the things, the issues that black people are dealing with in America, this has got to be right at the top of the list, food and land. My grandparents were farmers. They were farmers, and they sold a farm and moved to Milwaukee to help them. And but they had a garden in the backyard, and they grew some of the biggest collard greens. And down south, my grandmother had a garden. She had all the berries, blueberries, blackberries, blueberries, and these little tomatoes. And I used to love, I was 2 or 3 years old, to go in that garden and get sick. We had fig trees. We didn't have no corner stores. We had fig trees and apple trees and canned orchards. And all of that food was so good. Watermelons, we used to feed a lot of that stuff to the hogs. We could bring that back. We could bring that back in our backyards.
Yes, sir. I wanted to address, if y'all don't mind, I wanted to bring something to our attention. I mentioned it before. We have a group of over 100 people, and we have to learn how to fast. We have to learn how to fast because that is a survival kit that the Most High Elijah Muhammad gave us through the book, How to Eat to Live, because we do not know how to eat to live. We don't understand that there are certain foods that are not meant for us, and certain foods are meant for animals, certain foods are meant for birds. And we don't understand that sometimes we think we're eating the right food, but we're actually eating the wrong food. See, an animal, instinctively, he knows exactly what he's supposed to eat. The human being was given... The human being was given guidance on how to eat. The first job that God gave to man in the garden was farming. That was the first job that God gave to man in Adam and Eve was farming, till the land. That was the first job. And then God hid the tree. God hid the chair in the tree. God hid the buildings in the ground. Because once we start extracting from the tree and in the ground, we can build a civilization. So God hid everything from us, but he gave us enough knowledge and wisdom to where we can use those things to sit down on a chair, to make a house. He gave us everything that we need and is in the earth. We just have to go back to the earth. And if we just submit to the program that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us, we can survive. We can connect with our brothers and sisters in Africa, because the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is building a nation, not just for Muslims, it's for all of our people around the world. But we have to connect with this man. We know that everybody is not going to join this. We know that. We understand that. It's like America has a relationship with Israel, and Israel gets money from America, and we're saying the same thing. Black people have to support the economic blueprint of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because if we did that with just 5 cents for a whole year, just 5 million people, that's $90 million. You know what we could do with that type of money, that type of leverage that we could do? And it's 40 to 50 million. We're talking about just 5 million people. What we could do, we can have our own bank. We can have our own schools. We can teach our own children, because the school that I work at, they don't teach this stuff about farming. They don't teach this stuff about home ed. They don't teach none of that. It doesn't teach none of that. And I work in the public school. It's a dead zone.
Well, schools certainly do have a number of feeding programs. In fact, they've got the breakfast program. They've got lunch for them. And I would wonder a bit about what type of evaluation we are doing to determine if the foods that are being delivered to our children, that our children are ingesting in those settings, are ones that are foods that are going to be nurturing, that will develop their brains to allow them to be as great as we know that they have been historically. I've wondered about all of the feeding that takes place in the interest of our benefit. But I would have to wonder if that truly is the case.
They're killing them. I work in the public schools, and the food that they are giving our children are systematically designed to go to certain areas. They have, right now, if you take some food and it goes to the wrong area, the person that's on that truck, they will fire them, because those specific foods are targeted for a specific area, and it has specific things that it must do to the children. That's why the children today are obese, because of the food that's in the schools. The target areas, we have been targeted for death in our community, because we do not provide our own foods. We have to make these co-ops. We have to come together collectively and start growing our own food, and we have to produce our own stores where we can have an outlet, like the white folks have an outlet, to where they feed some of us, the ones who's conscious, but everybody's not conscious about eating. This is something that we have to train our people how to eat to live, because they don't know how. So they will eat flaming hot reds at the schools. Do you know right now that you can drop a French fry on the ground and drop a flaming hot, whatever you things are, and the ants will go to that first? I don't know what's in that red hot, flaming hot, but the ants will go and eat it, but they will not eat the French fry. They will go for the flaming hot.
Well, you know, there's research that's been done on, there's a book called Fat, Salt, and Sugar. I may have them in the wrong order, but it's research on how the food industry does research to determine the right amount of fat, salt, and sugar to put into these non-foods to get people addicted to them. So the people become addicted to those foods, and they keep buying it over and over again. That's been documented. Yes. And there's a documentary, when you were talking about the earth and the ground, it reminded me of this documentary called Kiss the Ground. And it talks about how the farming practices are depleting the soil, and they promote regenerative farming. And when Brother Kojo talked about the farmers in South Africa, first of all, 70% of the farmland is still in the hands of whites in South Africa. But those few blacks who have been given land and not given any tools, they haven't been given the resources to develop the land. So it has, you know, it's like an empty gift. But if those farmers would learn regenerative farming, where you just put the seeds in the ground. You don't do all the tilling and all that. You don't have all that fancy equipment. It would not only produce the food, but it would begin to solve the ecology situation, the greenhouse gases and all. Because when you plant directly into the soil instead of tilling it, then the soil absorbs the gases rather than emitting them into the atmosphere. So there's so much for us to learn. But what I'm hearing you say, and add in as much as you want, I'm hearing you say that we need to start with gardens.
That's right.
In our backyards I have virtually no backyard. But what I did was I bought one of those towers where you can grow food in a tower with all these little pots going around it. And you plant your food. You can plant 20 or 30 different foods in that tower. So I put that out there. And then as I started planting in there, I just took old flower pots and put seeds in there or seedlings, you know. So there's a way that we can grow our food. And then we have to research, since we don't live in the South, where we can grow food year-round, we've got to research how to grow food in the winter, indoors.
Well, we have a man that's among us, Will Allen. He's a god in that area. He can teach us everything that we need to grow food. Allen been working with brothers and sisters in the Nation of Islam on growing fish beds and growing food. This is something that we need. We need to be in a place or a building to where we can sit down and teach the youth the importance on how to grow, being farmers and growing food in the backyard. And also, we need to become more acquainted with our neighbors, and we need to teach them the importance. We need to teach every living individual the importance of growing our own food. Then we need to teach the importance on, we need to get stores to where we can house the food and we can distribute it to our people. This is something that we have to do, because the enemy is really on a bent out desire to get rid of us, because he doesn't need us anymore. So the shots, I wanted to address the shots. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Minister Farrakhan, 4th of July last year, he told us, do not take the shots. Because what is happening, the spike protein is producing itself and it's causing people, they're spreading the COVID-19 through the spike protein. And also, most of the people that's taking the shot, they don't know that the shot is a chimera. A chimera is three different viruses in one. Some people are showing up HIV positive from the shots. And people don't know this.
We don't know that. They don't let that be known.
No. They're not going to tell us. They're not going to tell us that. And that's why the minister told us to get Paxlovid, but we have to get this information to our people, because they don't know. They don't know that. We don't believe that this man is our enemy. Because if we did believe that he was our enemy, then we would treat him as such. But we don't believe. We believe that he's a friend. And by us believing that he's a friend, he's in the position to where now he can feed us. He can take care of us. He can clothe us. He can do whatever he wants. And then he can get rid of us in the end, because he do not want us on this planet. And if we believe that this man wants us, then we're highly mistaken.
I have a couple of questions. One relates to genetically altered food.
Yes, sir.
And the reason behind that, and well, you could talk about that if you can highlight some information about genetically altered food and how that's affected us.
When you talk about genetically altered food, I mean, he's genetically altered himself. So he's trying to make people like him. So if he's genetically altered in his nature, so he wants everybody to be the same as him. Now,
that's right.
They had some track women that was running running for the Olympics. This is what they said. The sisters beat everybody running, and they said that these women's testosterone levels were so high to where that they wanted them to take birth control pills so they can be competitive with their white counterparts because they were outrunning them. So
wow.
He's genetically modified, so therefore he can only produce what he is. So therefore he's producing his food because that's what he is. He's genetically modified, so he's giving us the same food that he eats. Genetically modified, and it's against our nature to have this. And if you study back in the day, remember when we used to run outside, we play ball, we play football, we just drink Kool-Aid, cookies, cakes, and we didn't have diabetes like we had today.
No,
we had it, sir.
And drink plenty.
And another thing too, you wouldn't see women being as heavy as they are. Like,
oh no,
when
sir.
You walk around down, you know, walk down the street or. You know, I'm a single man. I look at all the women still, you know. And so I'll be looking at them, wow, what? They'd be looking like fullbacks and linebackers and stuff. And I'm wondering, is the fast food doing that to them?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I did 20 years in jail. I did 20 years. And I went to a family reunion. It was 30. I haven't seen people in 30 years. And brother and sister, what I saw brought tears to my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
I'll be 60 in 2 years. So when they saw me, they said, man, you still look the same. What are you doing? And mm-hmm. I gave them the diet plan of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us something so profound. In the book that Jesus said that he came to give us abundance of life. He came to give us abundance of life. The only way we can have abundance of life, you got to have a supreme dietary regimen. And How to Eat to Live is the book. There was a doctor, there was a man named Dr. Brad. Y'all know the Brad cider vinegar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Brad,
the amino acid.
Yeah, what he did, he stole the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad book, and he put in his book, it's called Dr. Brad. It's a book that out of California. He took that book and he put it in there verbatim, the teachings of How to Eat to Live in his book. So they stole the information. See, this Caucasian understands that what the messenger gave us, we laughed at it, but they took it and they snuck in their closet and they examined it and said, man, this man is right. So what they did, they said, okay, Mr. Muhammad, you're correct. So what we're going to do, we're going to take the food and we're going to destroy it because we know your people are becoming conscious. Like mm-hmm. peanuts. Peanuts are not good for us. And we eat peanuts because they know that we're becoming more conscious and we're becoming more vegetarians, but our people are leaning towards peanuts. Peanuts actually destroy the immune system. It has a thing in there called goitrogen. What it does, it destroys the lining and the rectum of the male and the female. It mm-hmm. takes the zinc. It takes the zinc out. Peanuts are made for birds, not humans.
Yeah, Dr. Gundry talks about that. How peanuts have lectins in them, which are proteins that are designed to protect the plant from being eaten. So it's really a poison that you're ingesting.
What?
The lectin. Mm-hmm. And then they're coming out with research about intermittent fasting.
Right.
Because the you know, we have to start learning about our bodies and
mm-hmm.
how our physiology works, because our bodies have to build up and then they have to get rid of the byproducts of building. Mm-hmm. And so the body takes a number of hours,
mm-hmm.
for the body to get rid of the insulin that is spiked every time we eat. Every time we eat, we get an insulin spike in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes 3.5 hours for that insulin to die down in order for your growth hormone, mm-hmm. to build up to renew your cell. So the intermittent fasting is giving your body enough time.
Yes, ma'am.
To go through that growth hormone insulin cycle. Those mm-hmm. two are antagonists. And if right. one is in the blood, it blocks the other. And growth hormone is what keeps us young, it's what regenerates us, mm-hmm. and helps us to heal. So,
right.
yeah, that intermittent fasting is important. We use what we call a fast feast cycle, meaning okay. you eat and then don't eat anything else for at least 4 hours to give that insulin time to get out of the blood.
Yeah, can I say something to that right there? Mm-hmm. The intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Once the body performs the saliva to digest the food, it takes the mm-hmm. stomach 4 hours to complete the digestive process.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes to the, I might get them up and down, it goes to the small intestine. It takes 12 hours to go through the small intestine, and it takes 8 hours to go through the large intestine, which is a completion of 24 hours. God knew when he designed his body, he knew exactly how it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the circadian system. It's called the circadian system.
It's based on cycle. Yeah.
Yeah, based mm-hmm. on the 24-hour cycle of the clock, and it's based mm-hmm. on the rotation of the Earth and how the diameter, how the speed of the Earth rotates. So everything is designed perfectly that God made our system. So when we get up in the morning and when we eat breakfast, what we just did, we just broke our fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when you get up in the morning, you already got the energy, you move it, and then all of a sudden we go to work with these Caucasian people, or we going to be with our family, and we eat, and we're like, man, I don't know why I'm tired. You just ate. You just pulled all the energy from your brain down to your stomach.
That's
and
right.
then the process has not been completed properly, and then we eat at 12 o'clock, and then that starts storing fat. So the most unbelieved mama told her, he said, the best time to eat is around 4 o'clock because now the sun is going down because we are related to the sun. So when the sun starts going down, we start getting tired. So the energy from the food that we ate at about 4 o'clock, it will be used to get us for another 24 hours there where we can eat again. I've been eating how they live for 30 years. I have been eating one meal a day, and I fast every week, 3 days out of the week. And I'm perfectly healthy. And we have a group that does this.
Okay. So.
I'm just thinking about the corner store, the corner store. When you walk into those corner stores in the black neighborhoods, it's filled with salt and sugar.
Yeah.
You know, the potato chips and the can, all that stuff they're selling us. Not only mm-hmm. are they taking our money out of our community because it doesn't turn over mm-hmm. with us, it goes back out to where they live. You know, these people who don't look like us, you know, the Asians or what they call them, you know, the Indians or whatever, they mm-hmm. live in the suburbs. They got mansions in the suburbs because they're making so much money in those corner stores. But those corner stores should be outlawed when you look at what they're selling us.
Yep. But can I say something, please? But you know what, Brother Charles, you're 100% right. But isn't that kind of our fault for patronizing them, for going to them? And then, like you said, these corner stores are awful. But let's not leave out these gas stations where our babies mm-hmm. are running in getting all this nasty juice and everything. You can go in there and get four bags of those nasty red Cheeto things, you know, for a dollar. Anything you can get like that, and automatically you know it's wrong. I mean, that's wrong. You open up some of these little kids' book bags and stuff, they got tons of flaming hot Twinkies, donuts, just on top of that. And then we also have to be careful, even when we're eating our fruit. These evil devils have gotten so clever. Now all your fruit, they done took the seeds out. There's no seeds out. I was in the store. A young lady was buying some grapes. And she said, oh, I'm so glad they don't have seeds anymore. I'm tired of spitting these seeds. I said, I don't mean no harm, but someone spit you. I said, all fruit should have seeds so it can, you know, so it could regrow, or so you can regrow it. It's supposed to have seeds. Now all of us are not babies on this phone, I don't think, but when have you known a watermelon to be the size of an apple now?
What? That,
yes, you go in Pick and Slave or Whole Foods, which Monsanto owns Whole Foods, but they own agriculture where they're poisoning the ground and the food, and they're telling the farmers what to feed the animals. But you go to some of these big stores now, and you got watermelon sitting up there, and it's the same size as a grapefruit or a cantaloupe. And no seeds.
Oh, yeah. You know, 10-10-15, Mr. Farrakhan took up a thing that he got from, he got it from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but it was styled some after Martin King and the boycott back in the 50s when he boycotted the bus station. And he said that we should boycott them and hit them in their pocket. What's the brother name of the Black Panther Party? King Rick. I like what he's doing, but there is something that we're missing. If we're going to boycott these stores, we got to have an alternative for our people to go to. We can go to every gas station and every store, and we can shut them down. We can go to them as a unified force and say, listen, man, y'all going to get the hell out of our community. And you better leave, because if you don't, you're going to leave out of here broke. You know, they're going to get arrogant and say, no, we're not going to do that. We round up the youth, we get the elderly, and we don't support them. And then when we smoke them out, then we buy the stores, because they're going to sell it, because we're not going to buy nothing. And then we go to the next store. See, this is why the Jews got mad at Jesus, because he was turning over the money tables. And that's like what we would do. We would go over and turn over the money tables. And then once they start finding out, they say, oh, man, here come these niggas. Y'all better get out of town, because they're going to boycott you. We should boycott every store, but we got to have an alternative. And then those stores, those gas stations, we can put fruit and vegetables inside those gas stations, but we have to boycott.
So, Brother Duncan, can you tell us, if someone wants to donate a nickel a day, how do they do it?
That will go to the Muhammad Economic Blueprint. You can go to NOI.org. It's NOI.org. It's the Economic Blueprint of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And it's really $18 a year. Just imagine. Now, we know that we're not going to get 50 million people that participate in this. But if we had a small group of people, conscious Black people, 5 million, that's $90 million toward land production. Minister Farrakhan, we can trust him. He has shown us many times over and over he would not sell us out. He would not sell us out. And we know that he wants us to get land. That's what he wants. He wants land. And he said that's the dire need that we must have. We must have land, because the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad told Minister Farrakhan, he said that when you're talking about producing food for your people, you have to do it like this. How much would 50 million people need three pieces of bread a day? Then he said the same thing about beef. He said the same thing about milk. He said that's how much land and cultivation and seed grains that we need to feed 40 million people. He said when you're speaking of a nation, you're speaking of a whole people. So this is the stuff that we need. We need farmland. We need land. We need five states.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
Can you speak on what's going on right now? I'm sorry. I was just going to say the U.S. Senate had before them a settlement for the black mm-hmm. farmers, and they've been waiting on that settlement for what, over 40 years, and now they finally got an agreement. But and the money is supposed to be allocated to the black farmers. But you got two or three senators who are holding up black farmers receiving that money, and one of the senators is from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. You know, brother. You know, see, we waiting on this white man to give us what we can give ourselves. See, if we continue to wait on him, and he has broken so many treaties and lied to us and tricked us and played games with us, he's a liar. This is what he does. He lies. He lies to us. But if we as a people, 5 million of us collectively got together and put in a national bank $18 out of 5 million, that's $90 million. Then we can take that money. We can create our own where we can come in, because in my area where I live at, you have construction. These white boys coming from West Dallas and whatever, they come in our cities and they build in our roads, our streets, and whatever. Now, I see this right here coming. Now, you see that building up on Fond du Lac, the Phoenix place? Do you really believe they built that for us? Or is it going to be a takeover?
Mm-hmm. Something to think about.
Because if they build it, they're going to want to take it over.
They call that gentrification, huh?
Exactly what it is, brother. Exactly what they're doing. See, they pre-planned for years. And we don't see the game, because if you go out on the outskirts of the city, a lot of our people ran from the inner city because of the drug trade and the violence and the killing and all that. That was all designed. Our people ran out into the suburbs. They put the jobs out there. And now if you go out there now, in the lack of desert, them stores not even out there no more. They left the black people out there hanging. And now it's just like a war zone. And the white people are coming back into the inner city because they want to go down there and watch the Bucks play. They want to have those festivals that they have every year. They want to come in the black community and buy up all the houses. If you go down by, Lisbon in 28th in Lisbon, they built all those houses up there. And you think them houses are for us? No.
Yeah, that's going on all across the country. In Washington, D.C., what used to be called Chocolate City, the inner city of Washington, D.C., now they got these lofts, and they're charging $5,000 a month. And so all the black people had to move out of that area, and white people who could afford to pay that, because they want to be close to the Capitol and downtown, they're paying $5,000 a month because they can afford to, for an apartment, to rent an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brother Duncan, if you could share with us, many of us do have homes, maybe single family homes, and we have a yard, we have mm-hmm. a front yard, we have a backyard. What is it that you can suggest to us that we can work with the land that we do own, that we already own, in terms of beginning to grow food that we can consume? If in our yard, our neighbor's yard, our church's yard. We do still have some land.
Yes. So
that seems to be a place that we have control of.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we go about beginning to use the land that we do have for the purposes that you're telling us about?
We need to start farming in our own backyards. And it was something that you said what brought something to my mind. Minister Farrakhan said the church, the reverends are some of the freest people on the planet. The church has all this money that's coming to them. If they would take and buy up land, or if the church is in the area to where they should teach classes. We understand that Jesus saved, but Jesus can't save us if we eat bad food and it's killing us. But if they teach in these churches, let's start growing food where the church is at, because some churches have a lot of land. And that land can be used to grow food. See, we have to pressure these people, these pastors, to force them and say, man, listen, we're not going to give you no more of our money for you can drive around in the Cadillac and Benz and Mercedes, and you're not giving nothing back to the community. You're taking our money, and you're putting it in a white bank, and the white people are benefited from that money that's going in the bank. So now I've been a member of this church for 20 years, and I'm a member of this bank because you told me to be a member of the bank. I go to the bank. I can't even get a loan. But yet you told me to put my money in this bank, and I can't even go get a loan from them. Something is wrong. We have more churches and less jobs in our community. Whenever you have more churches and you have black stores in the community, that's a problem. So we should start growing in our yards and in the churches. We need to use that land.
You know, there's a church, I think it's on Second.
How do you grow in the yard? I remember my mother, who was a school teacher, but she would, in the summer, look forward to growing in her yard. And I don't remember a lot about it except watering it. And harvesting some of the best tomatoes.
Oh, my God.
That we had. I've never tasted anything like that except that has been grown at home. So how does one start this process?
Digging up his backyard and go and get the necessary seeds, and it's a process, and it's something that we can teach, grow the little things first. How to grow onions, how to grow cucumbers, right in our backyard. Around April is the best time, but right now, this is a little late, but this is something that next year that we can prepare and do this, because those are the simple things, just in the backyard. I mean, we're not using the backyard anyway. We ain't got a dog. We're not going. When was the last time that we've been out in the backyard with a family? We ain't been back there. So we need to use it, tear the backyard up, and use it to grow food. Start off with the simple things, onions, tomatoes, carrots, and stuff like that. And then go to cauliflower, broccoli, and then we go to the next step. But we have to start somewhere. Start small.
Do we have to make sure that the soil is not toxic?
No. It's a way to get the toxins out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alan has these worms that he was with Minister Farrakhan. Minister Farrakhan called them little soldiers, I guess. That he has the worms that can, if your area doesn't have worms in the air, then that land is toxic. Worms take 90% of the toxic waste out of the ground. And also, I found out from learning from Will Allen that if you grow pumpkin seeds, flowers, it takes the metal out of the earth. Aluminum out of the he's a genius. Well, Alan is a genius.
And what about the seeds? do you have to make sure that when you buy the seeds for the plant that you're not buying the wrong, like, right, genetically altered seeds?
Yeah. Well, you know, the nation has seeds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the nation has seeds, and we was out to the farm. It was last year before COVID-19, and because the nation doesn't use chemicals, we were pulling up the weeds, and you know, it was just it's a hard job, but we, all the brothers that went out, the farm is in Michigan, so we went there and pulled up all the weeds. The Minister Farrakhan gave us beans, and one of the best foods that we can have they can't even orchard this bean is the navy bean. Did you know that the navy bean got its name after a military unit, because when the soldiers was out on the ship for a long period of time, they was getting radiation cancer from the weapons was emitting radiation. So they started feeding them the white bean, and they noticed that it was reducing the radiation, and they called it the navy bean. The navy bean is the only bean that's named after a military unit. All other beans, you got the black bean, you got the pinto bean, you got the pork and bean, you got all these beans, but there has never been a bean named after a military unit. And the reason why is because it helps detox you. It has all the fibers and the minerals that you need. That is the most strongest bean that can ever be given to the human, navy bean. That's why we make the navy bean. That's what makes the bean pie.
What would be one of the easiest item to start in one's own garden? What is the hardiest, easier to grow? And how do you protect it from the squirrels eating them? I know my...
you build a fence. You build a fence. You build a wire fence, like you have a chicken fence.
Mm-hmm.
You make one big. I mean, it's something that we have to do. You take a wire fence and you build, because it doesn't take a lot of money. You get the poles, you put the poles in the ground, and you put a wire fence, and then that stops the rodent. But, you know, we still got to go out and pull the weeds up. But yet, you minimize the salt from the little rodents, the little birds, and the little chipmunks and stuff like that, the raccoons. You put a protection around those areas, but we have to start. We can do it. We just have to do it.
And then a friend of mine said that when they were on the farm in the South, mm-hmm. their father would say, plant some for you and some for the
critters. That's right.
Yeah. So that's the easy way to do it.
because they coming. They want to eat too.
Yes. And they want good food too. They prefer genetically altered food.
No. They have a rat. You ever heard of the rat called the Methuselah's rat?
No.
The Methuselah's mouse. You ever heard of the Methuselah's mouse? Mm-mm.
No.
Well, they had three mice. One is called the Methuselah mouse. One mice, they let him eat at live. He ate all the time, whenever he wanted to. Then there was another one that ate three times a day. Then there was another one that ate once a day. The rat that ate at live, it got fat, it got bald-headed, it died, had a heart attack, died. The other rat, it died off. But the Methuselah mouse, it lived longer. Its coat was shiny, and it was bright. It had vigor, it had vitality, it had everything. So they know that 1 meal a day is necessary to have a long life. But as the day goes, we must put fasting in, because now they are in control of the foods. So now we have to put in more fasting and less eating. We just have to gain control. We just have to stop. We just have to gain control of our eating consumption of food. But we have to grow our own food. But like I said, we can start off small and grow big. Start growing onions and tomatoes, cauliflower, broccoli. We can grow that right in our backyard. And then we can live, and then we can connect with the farm, mom and farm, to get the beans. We have staple goods. We just have to connect. We can connect with Will Allen. Right now, I got like 100-pound beans. I got 2-pound, 100-pound beans. I have 100-pound sugar, brown sugar. I have rice. The nation has rice. And they just developed, I think it's in Indianapolis, they developed a what is it called? A navy bean that would last, I don't know how they did it. It'll last for 2,500 years. This is disaster preparation.
Mm-hmm.
The nation has so much stuff. They got, they took the navy bean to where now they make spaghetti, they make bean bread, they make nacho out of the bean. They're doing so much stuff with that navy bean. It's unbelievable.
Hmm.
You're making me think about that bean pie.
Well, I'll have some.
I got to give you a bean pie today.
I have some next week.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to give another announcement from our sponsor, EDOC Advice, and we provide specific medical answers to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer our faculty of EDOCs, who are licensed physicians and health professionals, who make themselves available to those globally seeking a better understanding of health issues and medical practice. The sponsors are welcomed. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, $Nirvana, INSTI, and PayPal, Sankofa_think@outlook.com. We are so happy to have had our guest here, Brother Duncan X of the Nation of Islam. And we'd like for you, if you have some final messages that you'd like to send to our listeners as it relates to the growing and controlling of our own food. Please, please, at this time, would you please give this to us?
Yes, ma'am. I could be reached at, my number is 616-929-2548. 616-929-2548. I am on Facebook, and it's spelled DUNKHANXMARTIN. If anyone needs Paxamune, because what is about to happen that's coming up, there's going to be a second blowing of the COVID-19. It's going to be worse than the first one. So Paxamune is something that we need as a community. So if people want to reach me, they can reach me at the number, or they inbox me on Facebook, and we can discuss the necessary needs that we need, because this is something that we need. Do not, whatever you do, please do not take that shot. Please. Please. So you can reach me at that number, and you can reach me on Facebook. Thank you.
Mother Shabaka.
Brother Duncan. Yes. Yes, thank you.
Do you have some words for us on this subject?
I would, first of all, I'd like to really thank Brother Duncan X for coming and sharing this. And this is starting the wheels turning in the brain and helping, you know, it's causing me to start thinking on multiple levels. This food issue is very critical.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's critical in our survival, and it's critical in our thriving and nation building. Because
right.
if we're going to our enemies, our oppressors, to feed us, we're giving up nationhood. We're giving up self-determination when we can't even feed ourselves.
That's
and
right.
So I appreciate you coming on. We're going to have to explore this whole idea. I hope that some people now will be inspired to start a little small garden. My garden is in flower pots. I don't have any backyard. But you can start that way, or you can, you know, dig up a little area in your yard and start. The fall is a good time to grow things like lettuces. Collard greens grow all the way until after snowfall. So, you know, if you get two or three crops that you're willing to start with, and then next year add two or three more and gradually grow it. And that bus, Brother Quojo, we need to find out who had that bus that you saw.
Yeah, I saw that. That bus was an omen. It was an omen for this broadcast because it opened up my mind. I was thinking, well, who owned that bus and where did they drop the food off at? And it got me to thinking.
Right.
Sister
Dee, we can find out.
Yeah. Sister Dee Dee, did you have a announcement that you wanted to make?
Are we getting ready to end, or?
Yeah, well, there's we're getting ready to close, but was there an announcement you wanted to make? You sent us a message about something. Did you want to share that with the listeners?
Oh my goodness, I haven't said it in so long. I forgot it. I closed my
mom.
My
apologize. Yeah.
All right.
I'm looking at it. It's Monsanto's Seeds of Death.
Pardon me?
It's Monsanto's Seeds of Death. That's
Monsanto's Seeds of Death.
Queen Mother Shabaka, are you talking about that I just sent you?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, yes. Okay, did I send that to you also, Doc? Dr.
Yes,
James?
Yes, you did.
Oh my God, yes. One of my children sent me that, and I was just looking at that, and I wanted to share that with you all. Remember earlier when I mentioned Monsanto, because they have done so much to the, to the agriculture, to our food, and like I said, they own Whole Food Stores. So, and all the GMO stuff, you know, that's all them. And they've been around doing some dirty stuff for a long time.
That's right.
Well, we're closed now. And we'd like you for joining us today. I thank all the Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing their vision for unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives. We look forward to bringing to you more programs that we hope you will enjoy. Good night. Stay safe. Thank you, Queen Mother Tobacco, Brother Charles Robinson, Brother Roger Price, Sister Dee Dee Conley, and St. Copa family, and all of you. Until next time.
Thank you and good evening. Good night.
Thank you. For a blessed rest of your weekend. And thank you,
Thank you,
Brother
Dunn. Thank you. Thank you.